Welcome back, everyone, on this glorious Monday afternoon. Jacob Rudner, Carlos Collazo, Ben Badler here for another Hot Sheet show. Scotty Braun, JJ Cooper out in Orlando for the winter meetings, so you're stuck with the three of us. If you haven't, make sure you head on over to baseballamerica.com, get a subscription. We got lots of new stuff coming out all the time. Chicago White Sox Top 10 is out on the site now. We've been pumping those out for the last couple weeks. And so again, head on over to baseballamerica.com. Lots to check out and lots to talk about for the three of us in this show, especially on the amateur side. MLB draft lottery coming up. So without further ado, let's hit the first move. MLB draft lottery set to go down tomorrow, Tuesday, December 9th in Orlando, with teams hoping to weasel their way into the number one overall pick. Chicago White Sox, Minnesota Twins, the only teams with odds north of 20%. The Pirates rounding out the pack among teams with odds in the double digits. This is a unique year, though, because we have a guy at the top of our draft board and unanimously seemingly in the industry, UCLA shortstop Rock Chalowski, who last year became just the sixth ever sophomore to win College Baseball Player of the Year. Los, I'm going to start with you. With a player like that at the top of the board, what are the implications of this draft lottery here, and what might somebody get in this guy Chalowski?
Yeah, the stakes just feel a little bit higher for this year's draft lottery. The last 2 years, I don't think we've had quite a separated talent at the very top like Rock is right now. Talking with you guys about the players in this class and just talking with Matt Eddy over at Baseball America, I think the thing that stands out is we just don't often see college shortstops of his caliber come around very often in the draft at all. And this is the first time we're seeing that in the draft lottery. Other premium positions like catcher in the college ranks, I think that's part of the reason why Adley Rutschman in the 2019 class was so sought after and so clearly in a tier of his own throughout that draft cycle. Rock is in that position now. I think that if you're a team who gets the draft lot, you win the draft lottery this year, you're the White Sox, you didn't get to pick inside the lottery a year ago. A lot of the fans were bummed about that. You probably would rather be in this year's draft lottery with the best odds, 27.73%. The fact that the teams who tied with you and should have the same odds, the Rockies and the Nationals, the fact that they're not eligible this year, giving you an even better chance to nab that pick and likely take Rock Chalowski if things stand. I think it's just a really impactful player that you have a chance to get here. And hopefully it makes the draft lottery itself just a little bit more exciting, because who doesn't love a clear cut 1-1?
Yeah, we don't normally see college shortstops like this, because usually the guys who are as good as Rock Chalowski when they're in high school just don't get to college. And MLB teams love to draft high school shortstops. And Rock Chalowski is one of the best shortstops in that 2023 high school class. But it was a really strong high school class, and it was a player with a very high asking price at the time. And once you get outside the first round, if you have a huge asking price, a lot of teams just don't have the bonus pool space to or they're not willing to meet that price. I think it's going to work out very well now for Rock Chalowski because, you know, he's at UCLA now. He looks like a guy who, if I don't know, I don't know where you guys would have him in our top 100 if he signed tomorrow, but I think conservatively, he'd be a top 25 prospect in the game. You can make a case for him to be top 10 overall right now. And, you know, the swing, the hitting ability, the defense at shortstop, we've had some good college hitters come through recently, you know, Nick Kurtz and Travis Bazzana and JJ Weatherholt and Wyatt Langford. But, you know, we haven't had somebody like Rock Chalowski, who checks all the boxes that you want in a hitter and who also gives you a very high probability of being able to play shortstop in the big leagues too.
And Los, on that front, I guess, how rare exactly is this? When was the last time we saw somebody college hitter of this caliber? I mean, has there been somebody like that in the last decade? Where does this stack up in terms of college hitter prospects?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you could look at Adley Rutschman in 2019. He's probably... he's probably the best prospect at this stage in the last 6, 7, 8 years. I think if you're looking for college shortstops in particular, you have to go all the way back to the Dansby Swanson, the Alex Bregman draft in 2015. So I've been saying that Rock is at least the best college shortstop prospect in a decade. And I think that is true. And even then, when you're looking at Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman, at the time. I think Rock just has a more dynamic tool set than even those players did at the time. Maybe Ben, if you disagree, you can chime in here. But when Ben talks about Rock Chulaski being likely to stick at the position, I think that, like, we all know here that Rock is a dynamic defender. He's not just a player who is going to stick there. I think he can stick there and be a great defender at the position. And so when you're talking about a potentially elite shortstop, think about how Merrick Houston plays his shortstop position now, what he already showed in pro ball. I think Rock Chulaski is an equivalent defender. He just has the sort of offensive chops that warrant him being in the same discussion as offensive players like J.J. Weatherholt, like Dylan Cruz, like Adley Rutschman, like Wyatt Langford at the same time. I mean, Jacob, you kind of put this into some context when we were talking about Rock Chulaski winning our Player of the Year award, but it's very rare for a college player who's not in their draft eligible season at all to win that award. The fact that Rock did that and now can add more to his resume this year just makes it a really enticing package all around. They're really, it's hard to envision avenues where Rock fails and does not add value in some capacity. He could be a worse hitter than we expect and still be valuable. He could hit for less power and still be valuable. He could, the run tool could back up significantly and he could still be elite. There are just so many paths for him to create value for a Major League Baseball team.
On that front, there has never been a Baseball America back-to-back winner of College Player of the Year. Ben, this year obviously is unique with a guy like Rock Chulaski at the top of the board, but generally speaking here, big picture, where do you net out on the draft lottery itself? Is this good, bad for the game? What does this do to baseball in terms of having the structure at the top of the draft?
I think it's a very good thing for baseball. I mean, we used to go through years of teams just tanking and tanking and tanking and just acquiring, you know, number one overall pick, or top five overall picks several years in a row. I don't think that's a good thing for the game to have that incentivized to just stop trying entirely at the major league level. Now, look, obviously, like, the Rockies are not going to go out and spend a whole bunch of money this season and try to, you know, turn themselves from the worst team in the league to the best. But I do like that the system is in place now. Maybe some things you might want to tweak on the margins, but I do like that there's a system in place that doesn't just reward teams with access to, you know, Rock Chulaski or whoever it is, the best players in the draft every single year, just because they put a terrible major league team on the field. And even if you're not tanking, you're just making bad decisions over and over and over. I don't think you should be rewarded with the best amateur players in the world at a significant discount either.
A lot of good players at the top of the draft that, you know, Rock might outshine here a little bit. Carlos, who else should we be keeping an eye on just in terms of top six picks, players that could contend, you know, for these top roles outside of Rock?
Yeah, it has a chance to be a really strong draft. I think it's hitter heavy at the top now, which is what a lot of these teams picking in the top who maybe are going to miss out on the number one pick want to see. You want to see up the middle hitters, maybe proven hitters from the college ranks. Right behind Rock Chulaski, we have Grady Emerson, who's the best high school player in the class right now out of Texas. He's just a very well-rounded, intuitive, toolsy player. I mean, the hit tool for him is established. He's been a four-time USA baseball player at a high level. You go beyond that, you've got other high school shortstops like Tyler Spangler, Jacob Lombard, who give you a varying degree of safety and hitting prowess with Spangler. And then Jacob Lombard, one of the more toolsy players in this class. He obviously has big league bloodlines that come with that. And then you look at other shortstops in the college ranks. I mean, Rock Chulaski does get a lot of attention here, but we're hearing a lot of really positive things about Justin LeBron, the shortstop at Alabama. He has really exciting tools. I think there's maybe a little bit more hit risk. There's some strikeouts he's going to need to clean up, but there's a lot of upside there. If you want to go for the pitching route, there are going to be a lot of interesting arms that are kind of jockeying it out next spring. Liam Peterson at Florida is the guy we have at the top of the board right now. He could easily fit inside this top five, top 10 conversation with continued progress. If you want to go pure safety for a guy that you just feel really confident in, I think Derek Curiel, the outfielder at LSU, he's had an advanced hit tool since his freshman year in high school and has just continued to hit and hit and hit year after year. The power and the impact that he showed was better than maybe we expected it to be in his freshman season with LSU. Now he's moving from left field to center field. So it's a lot of up the middle hitters. There's some power arms. There are guys that I haven't even mentioned we could continue to talk through, but I am excited about the top of this class, even beyond Rock Chulaski, although I would like for some of these guys to kind of establish who's 2, 3, 4. It's fairly muddled beyond him, but there's talent to be had.
We got more MLB draft lottery talk coming up right after this.
Nobody covers the prospect world and the draft world like Baseball America, and you get a little taste at baseballamerica.com. But if you would like the full menu, then get yourself a subscription to Baseball America at baseballamerica.com.
Holiday season is upon us, and if you're still searching for gifts, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen, like the MLB Perfect Catch coaster set, which can turn any table into a home run display. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone and every occasion. From moms and dads to kids and teens, from birthdays to the holidays to anniversaries, you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. All right. Well, we've talked about the top player who teams can get after in the MLB draft in 2026, at least before the spring gets going. But I want to talk about the teams. Which are the teams that could benefit most from doing pretty well in this lottery tomorrow night? Who can win outside of maybe number one overall? Ben, I'll start with you.
A lot of the teams that have the best odds in the draft lottery are the teams that we're used to seeing with high draft picks. One exception here is the Braves. They haven't had a pick higher than 20th overall in 7 years. So they're picking at the back of the draft. They don't get extra draft picks because they're not one of those smaller markets, smaller revenue teams. And until this year, their draft picks and the, you know, their first round draft picks have been almost all pitching. And it shows in the lack of position players, the lack of hitters in their farm system right now. I expect the Braves to be a good team again in 2026. So if this is a one-year aberration, the potential to get a high draft pick and potentially number one overall and be able to draft Rock Chalowski, but even if it's a top three, top five overall pick that they end up with, they're going to at least have the opportunity to draft a hitter, whether it's a guy like Grady Emerson or a top-level high school hitter somewhere else that they just have not had access to in the last 7 years. And this is a team that ranked dead last in all of baseball in OPS from their shortstops in 2025. So being able to potentially draft Rock Chalowski would be a huge, huge win for the Braves.
Carlos, anybody for you?
Yeah, the Braves are an obvious standout just because he'd be such a plug and play at their weakest position. I mean, one of the teams that I look at here, well, I look at two teams. The Orioles, I think, fit in the same conversation as the Braves. There's not as immediate a need for a shortstop, obviously, with the Orioles, but that is a team that I could immediately see being competitive a year from now. And again, if it is like an aberration and they're going to get some better health in the lineup, they have a lot of guys, not a lot of guys, but Samuel Basayo could be an immediate infusion into the lineup. So you add Rock Chalowski somewhere. I don't know exactly where the defensive alignment for Baltimore would be if you added Rock Chalowski to Jackson Holliday, Gunnar Henderson. That's a lot of good talent to have. But like we say all the time, having too many shortstops is never a problem. The one team that I don't know if they're going to be competitive in the short term, but who I would be fascinated to see Chalowski added to the organization is the Pirates. Because I think you've seen them over the last few years do a really nice job with pitching development. They've taken a lot of high-profile, high in the draft arms. They've gotten returns out of those players. Paul Skeens has been, I don't know, a top three, top five pitcher in the league since he debuted. We're hoping that Connor Griffin is going to add some pop to the lineup in the near future. If you throw a guy like Rock Chalowski in there, I think it's right on the timeline that we would expect for Connor Griffin getting to the majors. So I just think that's an organization that overall looking to get out of this rebuild really needs to find a way to get some more life in the lineup. Rochelowski would be a phenomenal addition to what they're doing on the pitching side there.
Yeah, the Pirates badly need position players, and being able to add Chalowski would just be a huge difference maker for that franchise. Because, yeah, you pair him with Connor Griffin, all of a sudden you have a young, you know, two middle of the diamond players that you can build around. And sure, they're both shortstops right now, and maybe a question of like who would be the better shortstop, but you could put Connor Griffin at shortstop and put Rochelowski at second base. You could put Rochelowski at shortstop and Connor Griffin at third base, or you could put Rock at shortstop and throw Connor Griffin out in center field where he does have experience and he could be a gold glover out there. So he's just that talented of an athlete. So you have a lot of options and flexibility to move those guys around too.
Carlos, one more quick question for you. Is there more need-based drafting, in your opinion, at the top of the draft? Like, how much does that play into what we're talking about here? Because there are some experienced options, especially on the college arm side. Like, are you able to start taking guys with the expectation that they're going to have an impact on your big league club within 2 years?
I mean, some teams are already doing that. We're seeing what the Angels have done in recent years. And sometimes you'll just get like, okay, we need our organization as a whole, major and minor leagues, we don't have much pitching talent. So we need to attack pitchers really aggressively in the draft. And you've seen the Angels do that. You've seen some other teams who've been really aggressive with arms just up and down the board. I think there is a case to be made that you could draft for need more than is typically associated with MLB's draft, because you're seeing players like Nick Kurtz basically get drafted, immediately join the major league lineup and be one of the best young hitters in baseball. And so if you think that's going to be the norm for the elite college players at the top of the draft, I think there's an argument to be made there. I still do think that ultimately you should not be drafting for need in any real capacity in baseball's draft, because I just feel like that could lead you to pass up better players to address areas of weakness in either your organization or your major league team. And if you do that and you miss on the player that you took, well, now you've just hurt yourself. You've not taken full advantage of the opportunity to add more talent. I think executives are pretty good about trading from depth to address weakness. And I think even if you have players who are moving quickly, that's still available to you. And I also think as well, when we're talking about a bunch of shortstops at the top of the draft, there's not a single team in baseball that I would be able to point to and say, hey, you have too many shortstops, so that's not an area that we want to address. If you find a Bobby Wood Jr. In any draft, if you've already got a couple good shortstops in your organization, you got a great shortstop on your major league team, you're not going to pass on Bobby Wood Jr. because you want to address first base. I don't think that sort of extreme, but on the margins, I think it maybe does make more sense than it did years ago.
And this draft in particular seems like there are some actual great opportunities for longer-term developmental plays. Ben, this is a really strong high school class at the top as well. Who are some of the names on that front that are standing out to you?
Yeah, I think Grady Emerson, in a year where Rochelowski did not exist, would be a very good candidate to be a number one overall pick. I think if you compare him at the same time to players like a Max Clark or a Walker Jenkins a few years ago, he fits right in that tier. I think if he were in the draft last year, I would have taken him ahead of Ethan Holliday. I would have taken him ahead of Eli Willits, who previously was in the 2026 high school class and then reclassified and then went first overall to the Nationals. So I think he's one of the big standouts. I think the high school shortstops are really strong this year, guys like Tyler Spangler, Jacob Lombard. And then the pitching too. You know, it probably isn't as much of a factor in these draft lottery picks that we're talking about, because we don't see high school pitching typically go within the top five or six overall picks these days. But there's a depth of really good arms. And if you're picking higher in the draft, you get more bonus pool space. So it does give you some more flexibility to spend some more money on some of these high school arms deeper down the draft. You know, I don't expect guys like, left-handed pitchers like Gio Rojas or Carson Bolamon or Logan Schmidt or right-handers like a Jensen Hirschkorn, Trey Rangel, Savion Sims. Like, I think these guys will be priority names that should go pretty early. But there's a lot of really talented high school pitching this year. And just because the way the bonus pools work, a lot of it is probably going to end up going to college baseball too.
You know, Carlos, you and I have had a conversation, and I think on multiple podcasts at this point, about just the strength and the variation between different draft classes. Where does this one stack up relative to last year? For somebody who maybe looked at last year's class and heard your commentary about how it was maybe weaker at the top than draft classes before it. It's very early, but where is this stacking up? And then, Ben, I'll have you answer the same question.
Everyone I've talked to so far thinks it's better than the draft class a year ago. All the scouts seem to like it a lot better, and it does help when you've got just a leading player at the top. Last year, the critique was we really didn't have someone come out and sort of establish themselves at the very top, especially on the college side. There was a lack of premium college hitters. That's a demographic just so highly coveted that when you don't have players come out and have the seasons that we saw from Travis Bezanna and Charlie Condon a few years ago to top your class, you start to dive into the high school demographic maybe a little bit earlier than you want. You have to take on more warts than you probably want on the college hitting side. But I think that there are still some questions about the second tier college hitters in terms of hitting prowess. Like, there are a lot of good tools to be found here. I think Rock is the most well-rounded, but with Derek Curiel, you've got questions about impact that he's going to need to answer. With a player like Sawyer Strohsnyder, he's only done it for a year. There may be some more swing and miss concerns. With Justin LeBron, he's got tools. Both LeBron and Strohsnyder have really exciting upside and tools. They need to show a little bit more pure hitting ability, cut down the strikeouts. Then you get into kind of your mid-tier, and it's, are these players going to play shortstop at the next level? There are some more positional questions. There's lots of depth. Ben mentioned the depth on the high school pitching side. I think this is one of the more talented high school pitching classes we've had in years, really. There are three high school left-handed pitchers that I view as no doubt first-round talents. Whether or not they get selected and paid there is a question. But then you've got other guys like Coleman Borthwick, who we haven't mentioned today, who's just got a combination of power and polish that's rare to see from a high school pitcher. There are maybe six high school pitchers that I think are legitimate first-round talents. You've got a deep college pitching class as well. We mentioned Liam Peterson, but I think Cameron Flukey, a right-handed pitcher at Coastal Carolina, and Jackson Flora, a right-handed pitcher at UC Santa Barbara, have every bit the opportunity to kind of pitch themselves into the SP1 conversation. We could be winding up in a situation where we have three legitimate power college right-handers that fit in the top 10 as well. So I really think no matter what demographic you're looking for, unless maybe you just really love catching, there's something that you can find here in this class to like. And I think that diversity of profile and well-roundedness also really helps this draft class out.
Yeah, I think this high school class for 2026 is loaded. I think it's the best we've seen since 2023 when you had Max Clark and Walker Jenkins and Colt Emerson and Bryce Eldridge and Aiden Miller and even like Kevin McGonigal didn't even go in the first round. It was a loaded year. 24, I thought, was a down year. 25 was okay. Looking ahead to 27, not as good as 26. I think this 26 class is the best we've seen since the 2023 class.
All righty. Well, lots of great talk about the amateur side of things. Let's flip on over to the pro side in the final sprint. The Seattle Mariners acquired lefty Jose Ferrer in exchange for top catching prospect Harry Ford and right-handed pitching prospect Isaac Lyons. Ben, we saw some big names get moved to the other side of the country. What did you make of the deal, and what does this mean for Harry Ford in particular?
I think it's great for Harry Ford because he gets an opportunity now, and he's ready to get that opportunity. For the last couple of years, I've probably been lower than most on Harry Ford as a prospect, but he is a good prospect to have in your organization. I just don't view him as an elite prospect, but I also think it's still a good trade for the Nationals. I mean, Jose Ferrer is a good, cheap bullpen arm with 4 years of team control remaining, so that has value, but the Nationals are able to capitalize on that right now. And Harry Ford, he does some things that you like, right? He's always walked a ton. And the contact skills are pretty good. It was only a 19% strikeout rate this year in AAA as a 22-year-old. It's probably average-ish raw power. Maybe gives you 15, 20 home runs. And to his credit also, I think his defense has gotten better. He's made improvements. You look 2 years ago, he committed 20 pass balls. This year, he didn't have any. There's still some things to clean up in terms of the receiving. That still needs work. But from the Nationals' perspective, it makes a lot of sense to me because Ford is, I think he's ready right now to prove himself And he's obviously blocked, or obviously was blocked, by Cal Raleigh in Seattle. So the question is just whether, for Seattle, could you have gotten more for Harry Ford? I don't know. 29 other teams, I'm sure, could see the same obvious thing in front of them, that Harry Ford was very, very blocked in Seattle. So we don't know the full discussions of what trade conversations Seattle was having involving Harry Ford, but I imagine this probably was the best offer that the Mariners got for Harry, or could have gotten for Harry Ford, which probably speaks to the, you know, the value in terms of how other teams were viewing Harry Ford around the league.
Yeah, I like this team really for everyone involved. I like it for the Mariners. I like it for the Nationals. I like it for Harry Ford himself, for the reasons you mentioned, Ben. I think Ford was, maybe if he wasn't quite there yet, he was getting into that Dalton Rushing, Michael Bush territory, where he's blocked on the major league team, but you think he's done enough in the upper minors to warrant at least an opportunity to prove himself in the majors. No, he might not be the sexiest, highest upside prospect in the world, but the Nationals are in a position where I think relievers, quality relievers on your team, is a luxury that you don't really need to have. You trade those, you take flyers on players like Harry Ford, who has some potential to be an asset into your lineup. The Nationals are not flush with young players who are coming out and looking really exciting offensively. And Harry Ford does some things really well. He gets on base. He's got a chance to play a premium position. He's not going to be blocked in Washington. Keibert Ruiz is under contract for a long time, but he's certainly not been the player we expected him to be or thought he might be. I mean, I would give this a solid A grade, a solid 60 grade for everyone involved in terms of the quality of the trade. There are lower profile players maybe, but it really just makes sense to me no matter what angle you view it from.
Ben, lightning round, quick grade for the trade.
I think Carlos is, I'd like to go to Carlos's school. I like the grade inflation he's given out, an A grade.
It makes sense. Like it makes sense. They gave up a mid-tier reliever for a flyer on a prospect at a premium position. Harry Ford, also incredible athlete. I think I watched him play every position on the field at East Coast Pro in high school, maybe except pitcher. So I think he's got a chance to play all over the place. I like it.
I like it for the Nationals too. It's I'd say a B plus for them.
Okay.
For Seattle, maybe a B minus with. Probably, I would have liked to see them trade him earlier to, I think, when his value was even higher, but it's going to be a useful arm they're getting back in return for a player where, you know, he didn't have a future, I don't think, in Seattle.
All righty, guys, before they play us out of here like the Oscars, remember to like and subscribe to the Baseball America YouTube channel. We appreciate you supporting all the work we do over there. Also, head on over to baseballamerica.com, like, subscribe. We appreciate you for joining us, and we will see you next time.